chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may dab in the middle of it.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Well, the big news this week is that Tucker Carlson was fired from Fox. Now, I'm going to play two clips here. One is his complete speech at the Heritage Society. And it's very, 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 very insightful and a little on the boisterous, flamboyant side, very cocksure of himself. And then we're going to play the little over two-minute clip that he said, "We'll see you soon," after he was actually fired. So here we go with Tucker Carlson. And at the Heritage, and what he said was very insightful, and he's going to have a much more meaningful future than he had at Fox. So here we go with Tucker.
I love the music. Thank you. You're really nice. I feel a little underdressed looking out in this crowd of handsome, well-dressed people. I just came from work. And if you wear a tuxedo in the air, they think it's the March of Dimes, so I didn't want to make it, I think it was a telethon, so pardon my appearance. It's amazing to be in a room. This is far more people than live in the town that I live in. I haven't been in an elevator in 3 years. That's how remote my life has become, so it's just very cool, or worn socks for that matter, to be in a room full of nice people. And I want to thank you, Father Scalia, wherever you are. That invocation, for some reason, that really got me. Yeah, it did. And actually, I'll just tell you, since it's just us and no one's watching, that it reminded me that I don't pray enough for the country, and I should. And I'm upset. But the answer is to include the country in your prayers. So thank you for reminding us of that. Anyway, thank you. I just want to start by saying that I'm grateful to be here, and I want to tell you why I am here. There are two specific reasons. The first and most immediate is that during this fall's midterm elections, I got almost every single call wrong. I typically don't weigh in on races because, what do I know? I don't actually cover politics. I'm not that interested. But this time I got so spun up and so emotional that I convinced myself there was this wave coming, this political liberation that was going to happen. And I told our viewers that in some great detail and introduced a series of candidates who subsequently lost as, the new governor of New York or fill in the blank. And it was so humiliating to be that wrong in public, often wrong, not usually in front of other people, that I thought I've just got to take some time off and think about why I was so unbelievably wrong. So I went pheasant hunting, not that it was the pheasant's fault, but that is kind of a way to clear your head. And I wound up, because bird hunting really is, again, not good for the birds, but very good for you. And I wound up in South Dakota with Kevin, among other people, including a couple of my college roommates. And I was just, I was so impressed by him as a person. And really, having spent my life in Washington, I can tell you, if you're not from here, the key question about anybody who runs any institution in Washington is, how false is this person? God sends messages. We can't immediately translate all of them. So I can't tell you what that meant. There clearly is meaning. The point is, the man who runs Heritage is not false at all. In fact, my assessment of him was he's completely real. He's an honest person. He means it. He's not playing a role. And that was so thrilling to me to see that. And by the way, it was confirmed by one of Heritage security people who was standing backstage with me. And I asked him, because the security guys always know, they're all former cops. They've seen everything. They have seen humanity in various states of drunken undress. Like, you can't shock them. And they know who's real and who's not. And I asked, what do you think? And one of them said to me, to my face, I would go to war for him. And I thought, And these are the kind of people who will tell you the truth. I mean, like, why would he lie to me? I don't even know his name, but he meant it. And so to see a leader, a real leader at the helm of an institution that matters, that has the kind of throw weight that Heritage does, was thrilling, was absolutely thrilling for me. Because the story of the last decade is the collapse of leadership, not of the population. The people remain noble and decent, so far as I can tell. I still live here. I'm never leaving. We have good people. We have terrible people in charge. And not just of our government, but of the institutions that I grew up in, the Episcopal Church, my high school. You know, I can just go on and on and on. They're all run by weak people. And, you know, it's the same in marriage. You know, weak husband causes angry wife. Weak leaders cause an angry country. That's true. And to see someone who's not a weak leader at the helm of Heritage just thrilled me. So I wanted to come for that reason, just being totally blunt with you. And the second reason is to pay homage and to give some measure of thanks to Ed Fulmer for giving me my first job, which changed my life. And I was, to say I was not a promising hire would be an understatement. That's not false modesty. In fact, if anything, I'm underplaying it. But I was leaving college without a degree or a job and attempting to marry my girlfriend, which I subsequently did, and ran into this giant roadblock in the form of her Episcopal priest father who said, no, you know, job first. And not only did I not have a job, I had like no idea what I wanted to do. And so I applied to a couple of different places, the CIA, if you can even imagine, some boarding school in Rabat. Because I thought, you know, Morocco, lower standards, maybe they'll hire me, no. And I wound up at Heritage, as you heard, as a fact-checker, copy editor at Policy Review, the quarterly magazine of the Heritage Foundation. And that job absolutely changed my life. I was paid $14,000 a year plus a $100 bill for Christmas, which Dr. Fulmer gave out personally to the entire staff, at least half of whom went downstairs and bought liquor with it at the liquor store, which I think is now part of the intern housing. But it was a long time ago. It was so long ago I smoked in my office. That's how long ago it was. That's like riding a mule to work, just to put it in the context of American history. Smoke in your office? Yeah, I did. In fact, Matt Spaulding told me to stop one day, and I thought, wow. This modernization program is moving too fast for me. I can't deal with it. I've always been conservative in the truest sense. But Matt, you were right, and I quit. And anyway, but yes, it was a long time ago. And in the course of that job, though I didn't get rich, to be honest with you, I did learn what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, which was become a journalist. And that was really under the guidance of a man called Adam Meyerson, who ran it, who was. That was 32 years ago, and to this day, he really is the kindest person I've ever worked for. Just kind and patient and exactly, he thought I was completely nuts. He thought I was a lunatic, and I could tell he thought that. But he was patient with me through my entire year and a half there, helped me get my next job at a newspaper in Arkansas. Because no one else would hire me, but he set me up with this job. He walked into my cubicle and said, "Do you want to move to Arkansas?" And so I called my bride, who was a religion teacher at the local Episcopal school, and I said, "Do you want to move to Arkansas?" And said, what a wonderful woman she's turned out to be. And she said, "Of course. Is that near Colorado?" Quote. But she was willing to go there. Very much a Northeasterner at heart. And we did, and we loved it. But I got there because Adam Meyerson felt that it was his job to help me get my next job, because his job was to train up reasonable people and put them in journalism, even if it meant sending them to Arkansas. And I was thinking about Heritage this morning in the shower, not a place I think about it, but I did today. And what makes it great, and one of the best things about Heritage over time, longitudinally, 50 years say, is that Heritage has always hired a lot of people. And that is an underrated thing. It really is. Giving people a job, even if it's 14 grand a year plus a $100 bill for liquor, you change someone's life. You put them on a trajectory. At least that's true for me. I mean, I had not succeeded in school, to put it mildly. And I did not feel, I always felt like I was smart. Not one other person felt that way. Until I got to Heritage. I'm not sure they were super impressed, but they treated me like an adult. Because they had high intellectual standards. They were standards of honesty. And, you know, the idea at Heritage when I worked there wasn't just that, you know, we're fighting this war against the other side, of course. But it did not logically follow from that at Heritage that you could say whatever you wanted. Just because the other side was rotten didn't mean you could be rotten. They really hewed to the highest standards of factual accuracy, intellectual honesty. They really meant it. They did. And even if you didn't agree with them, they were very serious about it. They were intellectually serious people. Every single person I worked with. The receptionist in the office at Policy Review was going to school at night to learn Russian. And then the week I started at Policy Review, the Soviet Union collapsed, which was an amazing thing. The coup against Gorbachev in the third week of August, 1991, was the week I started at Heritage. And in retrospect, of course, you never appreciate the significance of things as they happen to you. You can't really know what the movie's about until it ends. But at the time, we didn't really appreciate how, well, two things. One, our entire political orientation was based on this war between the United States and the Soviet Union, this Cold War, but very much a war. And every part of our politics, as you well remember, those of you my age and older, remember, every part of our politics revolved around that central conflict. We were in conflict with a country that was both anti-markets and anti-Christian. And that put in stark relief our own beliefs. And what would happen when that ended, when there wasn't that clear contrast? That's the first thing. And of course, the second thing is we could never have known the third week of August 1991, as we saw totalitarianism die, that it would ever come here. We just couldn't imagine that. You know, we believe that victories were permanent. They're not, of course. That's the first lesson of history. You know, nothing is permanent except our own demise and God. But we didn't kind of get that. You know, if you told me then that this week the Department of Justice would have indicted a group of people, people I don't agree with, by the way, on a lot of different issues, black nationalist socialists from Florida, okay, kind of not my demographic, but would have indicted them for criticizing the U.S. position, the Biden administration's position on the war in Ukraine, and charged them with felonies, for which they're each facing 10 years in prison. If you told me that could happen here, I would have laughed at you. No. We have a First Amendment. Like, that can't happen here, but it has. That and a lot of other things, which are gravely unsettling, actually, in people who were rooted in the Cold War story and the reality of the Cold War, again, my age, 53, kind of know where that goes. So the purpose of my talk, which I, by the way, I will keep brief. I'm an inveterate talker. I can literally talk forever. You can't even imagine my capacity for loquaciousness. I mean, it has no end. It's a bottomless well. You know, if you dropped a quarter off the observation deck of the Empire State Building, how long would it take to hit the sidewalk? That was always what we talked about when we were kids. You would never hear it in my case. I can literally go on first. So I will stop, and Kevin and I are going to have a conversation, which I think would be much more edifying. But I would just say two things about the present moment, because I think about them all the time. And I brood on this constantly. And then I take every afternoon, because fundamentally I'm Swedish, I take a sauna every day. As a rest, I do, I'm not kidding, every single day. Never miss it. And my whole family does. It's like our one cultural contribution. Oh, we're Swedish. Ooh, it's a very deep ethnicity. Oh, yes. A lot of Swedish traditions. You should hear our comedy. It's hilarious. But the one thing I do is take a sauna to kind of get out of my head and get away from all this stuff. And I never can. And I just use my time in a sauna to brood more. But here are two conclusions I've come to, which I think are slightly less depressing than the most obvious, which is the country's really going at high speed in the wrong direction. Yeah, no kidding. Like, in ways that are just unfathomable. And for people my father's age, for example, who's 82 and such a decent man, and I could go on forever about my dad, who I saw this morning, you know, was born in an orphanage called the Home for Little Wanderers in Boston and became a success and the head of a federal agency and served in the Marine Corps and sort of lived the America that you imagine is possible for people who are smart and try hard and all that. For people of that age, it's too much, actually. The change is too abrupt. They can't metabolize it, really. It's too horrifying. But for those of us who are still engaged in trying to figure out what this means and not just repelled by it, I would say two things that are, I think, worth thinking about. The first is you look around and you see so many people break under the strain, under the downward pressure of whatever this is that we're going through. And you look with disdain and sadness as you see people you know become quislings. You see them revealed as cowards. You see them going along with a new thing, which is clearly a poisonous thing, a silly thing. You know, saying things you know they don't believe because they want to keep their jobs. If there's a single person in this room who hasn't seen that through George Floyd and COVID and the Ukraine war, raise your hand. Oh, nobody? Right. You all know what I'm talking about. And you're so disappointed in people. You know, you are. And you realize that the herd instinct is maybe the strongest instinct. I mean, it may be stronger than the hunger and sex instincts, actually. The instinct, which again is inherent to be like everybody else and not to be cast out of the group, not to be shunned, that's a very strong impulse in all of us from birth. And it takes over, unfortunately, in moments like this, and it's harnessed, in fact, by bad people in moments like this to produce uniformity. And you see people going along with this and you lose respect for them. And that's certainly happened to me at scale over the past 3 years. I'm not mad at people. I'm just sad. I'm disappointed. How could you go along with this? You know it's not true, but you're saying it anyway. Really? You're putting your pronouns in your email? You're ridiculous. You know, but no one else thinks it's ridiculous. Oh, no, it's the pronouns in the email. What does that even mean? What does that even mean? You're saying things you can't define. LGBTQIA+? Who's the plus? The plus is invited on my show anytime. Find a plus and I'll interview him. What's it like to be a plus? Am I a plus? I'm serious. I feel like I'm an addition. Does that make me a plus? No one even knows what it is. And the whole society, LGBTQIA+. All right. What's the plus? Oh, shut up, racist. Okay. So you reach that place and you feel, and this is one of the reasons, Father Scalia, I was actually overcome a little bit with emotion as you prayed, because I realized that I was so upset by the behavior of some people I love, frankly, in a country I revere and always have, that I wasn't praying for the country. You know, that's on me, and we all should be. But back to my point. So you see the sadness happening. But there is, as there always is, this is a fact of nature and theology and of observable reality, there is a countervailing force at work always. There's a counterbalance to the badness. It's called goodness. And you see it in people. So for every 10 people who are putting he and him in their electronic J.P. Morgan email signatures, there's one person who's like, no, I'm not doing that. Sorry, I don't want to fight, but like, I'm not doing that. It's a betrayal of what I think is true. It's a betrayal of my conscience, of my faith, of my sense of myself, of my dignity as a human being, of my autonomy. I am not a slave. I am a free citizen, and I'm not doing that. And there's nothing you can do to me to make me do it. And I hope it won't come to that. But if it does come to that, here I am. Here I am. It's Paul on trial. Here I am. And you see that in people, and it's a completely unexpected assortment of people. I'm really interested in cause and effect, and as I noted at the outset of my remarks and my ability to predict the future, working on that. But because I'm sort of paid to predict things, I try and think a lot about, you know, what connects certain outcomes that I should have seen before they occurred. And in this case, there is no thread that I can find that connects all of the people who've popped up in my life to be that lone, brave person in the crowd who says, no, thank you. You could not have known who these people are. They don't fit a common profile. Some are people like me. Some of them don't look like me at all. Some of them are people I despised on political grounds just a few years ago. I could name their names, but you may not even know about their transformations. I don't want to wreck your dinner by telling you who they are. But there's in one case someone who I made fun of on television, and certainly in my private life in vulgar ways, who was really the embodiment of everything I found repulsive, who in the middle of COVID decided, no, I'm not going along with this. And once you say one true thing and stick with it, all kinds of other true things occur to you. The truth is contagious. Lying is, but the truth is as well. And the second you decide to tell the truth about something, you are filled with this. I don't want to get supernatural on you. But you are filled with this power from somewhere else. Try it. Tell the truth about something. You feel it every day. The more you tell the truth, the stronger you become. That's completely real. It's measurable in the way that you feel. And, of course, the opposite is also true. The more you lie, the weaker and more terrified you become. We all know that feeling. You lie about something and all of a sudden you're a prisoner of that lie. You are diminished by it. You are weak and afraid. Drug and alcohol use is the same way. It makes you weak and afraid. But you look around and you see these people, and some of them really have paid a heavy price for telling the truth. And they are cast out of their groups, whatever those groups are, but they do it anyway. And I look on at those people with the deepest possible admiration. I am paid to do that. I face no penalty. Someone came up to me, you're so brave. Really? I'm a talk show host. It's like I can have any opinion I want. That's my job. That's why they pay me. It's not brave to tell the truth on a cable news show. And if you're not doing that, you're really an idiot. You're really craven. You're lying on television. Why would you do that? You're literally making a living to say what you think, and you can't even do that? Please. But how about if you're a senior vice president at Citibank? I'm serious. At Citibank. And you're making, you know, $4 million a year. And you've got 3 kids in Bedford, and 2 are in boarding school, and 1 starting at Wesleyan next year. And, like, you need this job, honestly. And your whole sector is kind of collapsing, and you know that. There is no incentive whatsoever for you to tell the truth about anything. You just go into the little re-education meetings and you're like, yeah, diversity is our strength. That's exactly right. We need equity in the capital markets. Okay. All right. So if you're the one guy who refuses to say that, you are a hero, in my opinion. And I know some of them. In fact, my job is to interview them. And I sit back and I look at these people and I give them more credit than I do people who display physical courage, which is often impulsive, by the way. And I'm not denigrating physical courage, which I deeply admire. But you interview people who do amazing things, you know, who rush into the proverbial burning building. And like every man is kind of trained from birth to fantasize about what he would do when the building catches fire and you hear a baby crying and so you run inside. No one is trained to stand up in the middle of a DEI meeting at Citibank and say, this is nonsense. And the people who do that, oh, they have my deepest admiration. And so their example really gives me hope. It thrills me. I talk to them all day long, people like that. That's the first thing. We should, in this sad moment of profound and widespread destruction of the institutions that people who share our views built, by the way, earlier generations that would agree substantially with every person in this room, they built those and now they're being destroyed. And oh, that's so depressing. But we can also see rising in the distance new things, new institutions led by new people who are every bit as brave as the people who came before us. Amen. Here's the second thing I'd like to say before I get to the conversation with Dr. Roberts, which is that it might be time to start to reassess the terms we use to describe what we're watching. So when I started at Heritage, the presumption was, and this is a very Anglo-American assumption, that the debates we're having are kind of rational debates about the way to get to mutually agreed upon outcomes. Right? So like we all want the country to be more prosperous and free and people to be less oppressed or whatever. And so we're going to argue about tax rates. And I think higher tax gets us there. I'm like a Keynesian and you disagree, you're an Austrian or whatever. But the objective is the same. And so we write our papers and they write their papers and may the best papers win. I don't think that's what we're watching now at all. I don't think we're watching a debate over how to get to the best outcome. I think that's completely wrong. And I've come to this conclusion, not, and I should say at the outset I'm an Episcopalian, so don't take any theological advice from me because I don't have any. I grew up in the shallowest faith tradition that's ever been invented. It's not even a Christian religion at this point. I say with shame. But I'm just saying this as an observer of what's going on. There is no way to assess, say, the transgenderist movement with that mindset. Policy papers don't account for it at all. If you have people who are saying, I have an idea, let's castrate the next generation. Let's sexually mutilate children. I'm sorry, that's not a political debate. What? There's nothing to do with politics. What's the outcome we're desiring here? An androgynous population? Is that really what we are arguing for that? No, I don't think anyone could like defend that as a positive outcome. But the weight of the government and you know a lot of corporate interests are behind that. Well, what is that? Well, it's irrational. If you say, well, you know, I think abortion is always bad. Well, I think sometimes it's necessary. That's a debate I'm familiar with. But if you're telling me that abortion is a positive good, what are you saying? Well, you're arguing for child sacrifice, obviously. It's not about like, oh, a teen girl gets pregnant and what do we do about that and victims of rape. I get it. Of course I understand that and I have compassion for everyone involved. But when the Treasury Secretary stands up and says, you know what you can do to help the economy? Get an abortion. Well, that's like an Aztec principle, actually. There's not a society in history that didn't practice human sacrifice. Not one. I checked. Even the Scandinavians, I'm ashamed to say. It wasn't just the Mesoamericans, it was everybody. So, like, that's what that is. What's the point of child sacrifice? Well, there's no policy goal entwined with that. No, that's a theological phenomenon. And that's kind of the point I'm making. None of this makes sense in conventional political terms. When people or crowds of people, or the largest crowd of people at all, which is the federal government, the largest human organization in human history, decide that the goal is to destroy things, destruction for its own sake. Hey, let's tear it down. What you're watching is not a political movement. It's evil. So if you want to assess, and non-specific theological terms, and just say, if you want to know what's evil and what's good, what are the characteristics of those? And by the way, you know, I think the Athenians would have agreed with this. This is not necessarily just a Christian notion. This is kind of a, I would say, widely agreed upon understanding of good and evil. What are its products? What do these two conditions produce? Well, I mean, good is characterized by order, calmness, tranquility, peace, whatever you want to call it, lack of conflict, cleanliness. Cleanliness is next to godliness. It's true. It is. And evil is characterized by their opposites. Violence, hate, disorder, division, disorganization, and filth. So if you are all in on the things that produce the latter basket of outcomes, what you're really advocating for is evil. That's just true. I'm not calling for a religious war. Far from it. I'm merely calling for an acknowledgement of what we're watching, which is not one, and I'm not, certainly not backing the Republican Party. I mean, ugh. I'm not making a partisan point at all. I'm just noting what's super obvious. Like, those of us who are in our mid-50s are caught in the past in the way that we think about this. One side's like, no, you know, I've got this idea, and we've got this idea, and let's have a debate about our ideas. They don't want a debate. Those ideas won't produce outcomes that any rational person would want under any circumstances. Those are manifestations of some larger force acting upon us. It's just so obvious. It's completely obvious. And I think two things. One, we should say that and stop engaging in these totally fraudulent debates where we are using the terms that we used in 1991 when I started at Heritage as if maybe, you know, I could just win the debate if I marshaled more facts. I've tried that, doesn't work. And two, maybe we should all take just like 10 minutes a day to say a prayer about it. I'm serious. Like, why not? And I'm saying that to you not as some kind of evangelist. I'm literally saying that to you as an Episcopalian. The Samaritans of our time. I'm coming to you from the most humble and lowly theological position you can. I'm literally an Episcopalian, okay? And even I have concluded it might be worth taking just 10 minutes out of your busy schedule to say a prayer for the future, and I hope you will.
Job,
thank you.
There, he was fully confident. He had a roaring applause, sound round of applause, and was confident in, and this is the problem. He began to be too popular and too insightful about the deep state, the New World Order, and so they took him out. That's the best, basically, he was delving into their home territory, exposing this whole system of rule, and so he had to go. But here's just a little 2-minute speech he made afterwards, which garnered over 60 or 70 million views, our listeners, but here we go with what he said afterwards after being fired. And he said he did have dinner with his wife for the first time in 7 years. So that's good. That's good for Tucker Carlson. Here we go with his See You Soon speech.
Good evening. It's Tucker Carlson. One of the first things you realize when you step outside the noise for a few days is how many genuinely nice people there are in this country, kind and decent people, people who really care about what's true, and a bunch of hilarious people also, a lot of those. It's got to be the majority of the population, even now. So that's heartening. The other thing you notice when you take a little time off is how unbelievably stupid most of the debates you see on television are. They're completely irrelevant. They mean nothing. In 5 years, we won't even remember that we had them. Trust me, as someone who's participated. And yet at the same time, and this is the amazing thing, the undeniably big topics, the ones that will define our future, get virtually no discussion at all. War, civil liberties, emerging science, demographic change, corporate power, natural resources. When was the last time you heard a legitimate debate about any of those issues? It's been a long time. Debates like that are not permitted in American media. Both political parties and their donors have reached consensus on what benefits them, and they actively collude to shut down any conversation about it. Suddenly, the United States looks very much like a one-party state. That's a depressing realization, but it's not permanent. Our current orthodoxies won't last. They're brain dead. Nobody actually believes them. Hardly anyone's life is improved by them. This moment is too inherently ridiculous to continue, and so it won't. The people in charge know this. That's why they're hysterical and aggressive. They're afraid. They've given up persuasion. They're resorting to force. But it won't work. When honest people say what's true, calmly and without embarrassment, they become powerful. At the same time, the liars who've been trying to silence them shrink, and they become weaker. That's the iron law of the universe. True things prevail. Where can you still find Americans saying true things? There aren't many places left, but there are some, and that's enough. As long as you can hear the words, there is hope. See you soon.
Tucker Carlson's going to come back all right on his own platform. I think Newsmax is courting him right now, and many others probably. But I don't think he intends to go in on with any formal broadcaster that's tied into the cable in any way. But Newsmax did get back on cable, which saved that broadcasting entity to a large extent. They lost millions a month, 10 or 12 million a month, by being off of that cable. So they're back on, but Newsmax does put out some pretty good conservative views. And there's one American network also, but I don't think he'll be there either. But anyway, he's going to come back and do something himself, and it'll be overwhelmingly successful because people value what he has to say. So here's an interview with RFK recently, Jr., and he talks about crony capitalism and free markets. Capitalism is what we need to get back to, but this is a very good, insightful interview.
Climate issues and pollution issues are being exploited by, you know, the World Economic Forum and Bill Gates and all of these big, you know, mega billionaires, the same way that COVID was exploited, to use it as an excuse to clamp down top-down totalitarian controls on society and then to give us engineering solutions. And if you look closely, as it turns out, the guys who are promoting those engineering solutions are the people who own the IPs, the patents for those solutions. Oh, it's a way, you know, it's being used. They've given climate chaos a bad name, you know, because people now see that it's just another crisis that's being used to strip mine the wealth of the poor and to, you know, to enrich billionaires. And, you know, I for 40 years have had the same policy on climate and engineering. You can go check my speeches from the 1980s. And I've said the most important solution for environmental issues is not top-down controls. It's free market capitalism.
Folks, I'm telling you right now, Kennedy is polling at about 20% on the Democrat side. If that number gets to 25 or 30%, this is this they're not going to be able to put this genie back in the bottle. Joe Biden already got away with not running a presidential campaign, but that was against Donald Trump. So the Democrats accepted it. They hated Donald Trump so much they would sacrifice their own mother to get Donald Trump out of their way. But with RFK, this is a different scenario. If Biden does not campaign, which we know he's not going to do, how are they going to steal this nomination? It's going to be so obvious. Man, I'm telling you, Joe Biden's got a big problem on his hands. And no, it's not his criminally acting as an unregistered foreign agent in the White House and as vice president. No, it's not his son Hunter and all of his crime, corruption, and sordid activity. No, it's actually Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And, you know, he's kind of been more of a activist than a politician in recent years, so it's hard to really get a feel for what his political savvy might be, what his political savvy might look like. We're getting, I'm starting to see it now. This man is extremely politically savvy, and he gets it. Because, I mean, I'm not talking to RFK. I don't know anybody working on his campaign, at least that I know of. I do know some people that are friends with him. But what have I been saying this week? I said RFK needs to press the gas, and he needs to be doing something every day. That's the only way he can properly apply pressure to Joe Biden. They're going to cover up all the Biden crimes, folks. Believe me. I get it. The House Oversight Committee is exposing it. You're going to see a lot more. It's all cut and dry. It's all there for the public. Joe Biden, unregistered foreign agent. I mean, it's just, it's all there. Hunter Biden, the tax evasion, again, unregistered foreign agent. So that's all there. The Democrats, the Bidens still own the Justice Department. So nothing's going to come of that. We'll see all the crimes. It'll all be exposed, and then we'll be shocked that nothing gets done. No, the real way to apply pressure to Joe Biden is what RFK Jr. is doing, and that's interviews every day, campaigns every day, make yourself in the public, available to the public every day for multiple hours just to show how Joe Biden is a non-existent factor. And the media was already complaining about it. Hey, why don't we get a press conference? And so then what did they do? They had the scripted fake press conference just yesterday. So here's RFK. This is, I'm telling you, this is just winning stuff. This is, again, I don't want to say it perfectly parallels what Donald Trump was doing on the Republican side of the aisle in 2016, but there are a lot of similarities. So here is RFK Jr. on with Kim Iverson, another great alternative press member. RFK Jr. exposes climate scam, says WEF and Bill Gates exploiting issues to clamp down totalitarian controls on society.
Where do you stand on climate policies that are being enacted right now? There is a difference between environmentalism and climate change. Where do you stand on all of that? And what types of policies do you support?
Climate issues and pollution issues are being exploited by, you know, the World Economic Forum and Bill Gates and all of these big, you know, mega billionaires, the same way that COVID was exploited, to use it as an excuse to clamp down top-down totalitarian controls on society and then to give us engineering solutions. And if you look closely, as it turns out, the guys who are promoting those engineering solutions are the people who own the IPs, the patents for those solutions. Oh, it's a way, you know, it's being used. They've given climate chaos a bad name, you know, because people now see that it's just another crisis that's being used to strip mine the wealth of the poor and to, you know, to enrich billionaires. And, you know, I for 40 years have had the same policy on climate and engineering. You can go check my speeches from the 1980s. And I've said the most important solution for environmental issues, not top down controls, is free market capitalism. And what we have in this country now is not free market capitalism. It's corporate crony capitalism. It's capital. It's cushy kind of socialism for the rich and a brutal, barbaric, merciless capitalism for the poor. a true free market promotes efficiency. And efficiency means the elimination of waste. And pollution is waste. In a true free market, you can't, a true free market would require us to properly value our natural resources, and it's the undervaluation of those resources that caused us to use them wastefully. In a true free market, you can't make yourself rich without making your neighbors rich and without enriching your community. But what polluters do is they make themselves rich by making everybody else poor. They raise standards of living for themselves by lowering quality of life for the rest of us, and they do that by escaping the discipline of the free market. You show me a polluter, I'll show you a subsidy. I'll show you a fat cat using political clout to escape the discipline of the free market and force the public to pay its production costs. So, you know, in terms of carbon industry, all of the things that people are trying to do to, you know, promote, to end carbon, we should be doing anyway, because, you know, carbon means cutting down all the mountains in West Virginia. It means, you know, we polluted 2,200 miles of rivers and streams in eastern Kentucky and West Virginia. Every freshwater fish in America now has mercury in its flesh from coal-burning power plants. That is a theft from the public. The waterways and lakes on the Appalachian, on the high Appalachian, every one of them is now sterilized from acid rain. We need to be reducing, whether you believe in climate change or not, carbon-based climate change, we need to be reducing our dependence on carbon. Carbon receives globally about $5.2 trillion in subsidies a year. If you end those subsidies, carbon cannot compete against more efficient and cleaner energy sources. And that's what we should be doing. We should be ending subsidies for the carbon industry. And we should be using true free market capitalism and finding the most efficient sources of energy.
Here's about 16 minutes of an interview with Bob Fletcher by Alex. And he predicts some very dire things. And what Bob Fletcher did years ago is coming true now. And he had real reservations about artificial intelligence. And he says it might take over. But here we go with that. And then we'll close up the program with our music. Well, thank you for listening tonight. God bless each and every one of you.
The problem is my predictions, which were so really horrible, was that we were going to be taken over by the New World Order, one world government. It goes back 72, 73 years. Actually, people don't realize that term, New World Order, one world government, which is what we are seeing today out of Washington, D.C. That's what we are faced with. And how we're going to handle it, I'm not sure. But that term was the term that Adolf Hitler used in 1938 when he started his junk, his crazy idea of a one world government, new world order. That's what he called it himself, Adolf Hitler's term. And it's been carried on by bad persons in government who don't care at all about the Constitution or the freedom at all, because that doesn't work. The dismissing of Tucker, right in when, of course, he was in the middle of a two-part series with Elon Musk, who also is a real enemy of the bad guys in general. I mean, and besides being very rich, he is worried about humanity. Information, the advancements, things that I'm aware of that most people are not, relative to artificial intelligence. The artificial intelligence is devastating. It's so good. It is so far ahead of what people could imagine. And a couple of years ago, they had two of them that they had put together and started conversations between each other. That's two separate, let's say, computers, artificial intelligent computers. And they ended up, the scientists who were doing the experiments, the electronic wizards that were doing that, they had to shut it down. Two of them. They started talking together, and they had created their own undecipherable language and started making plans and communicating at a level that the people that had originally constructed these two artificial intelligent operations, they had to shut it down because they were cut out. It was a language that they did not understand, and they were not, they actually had to just pull the power.
First off, it's my name's Bob Fletcher. It's interesting that they call for hearings after we ourselves were the ones that generated our appearance here to the committee that failed to hear us after we expended many thousands of bucks out of our pockets to get out here from several different parts of the country. It's interesting. They're calling it now an inquiry or requesting an inquiry into the militia groups as opposed to the title, which was to be the Militia Movement Across America, which would have been the title of the little Senate meeting that we were to have today, okay? So that's interesting. Obviously, it's politics as usual in Washington, D.C., take one thing, drop a few colors of black into the paint and change it around. Of course, normally it's whitewashed. This time it's being turned in the other direction. The idea, first off, the idea that there's more to be feared from American patriots that love the Constitution as opposed to the people that the ATF and the FBI, first off, there's not, to my knowledge, been any at all major criminal activity by any patriot group at all, period, done, end of story. And I can give you a list of so many abuses, including dead people, and drug smuggling and murder and assassination by those three and four letter combination agencies out of this town right here that you wouldn't even have enough time to cover it at a press conference, you know. So maybe Mr. Schumer needs to pick up one of these packages that includes the Constitution and he can get himself back on track. I'm afraid the Constitution, folks, is the single mandate of the militia patriot groups across America. It's the preservation of the Constitution of America, and we are losing it literally on a weekly basis, and the abuses of executive orders, which are dictatorial in nature and basically constitutionally incorrect, obviously, are completely out of hand. Yes, sir.
That's like 28 years ago. Bob Fletcher will be with us for the next hour and 50 minutes or so. I'm hosting the whole fourth hour today. And I was literally a month ago on air talking about all the great patriots that warned us about this that have been vindicated. And I was listing some of the names. And then I literally had a dream about 2-3 weeks ago where I was sitting around like a coffee table or a breakfast table with Ted Gunderson and Red Beckman and Bob Fletcher. And I went, wait, those guys aren't alive anymore, but is Bob Fletcher alive? We still had his number, called him, and I'm like, this time warp, why haven't we had him on in over 10 years? And also, when you think about with Rima Labo last week, because we had her on in a decade. She's an incredible lady. She said, why haven't you had me on? It's weird. Like, 10 years went by like that. I just it fell through the cracks. Like, all the original people, it goes back to Barry Goldwater, you know, then Ron Paul, but all these great people that warned of this. You think Alex Jones has been vindicated. You think Alex Jones is right. Wow, Bob Fletcher. And his story is amazing. But, you know, when he's been on the show over a decade ago sometimes, he would get into the CIA and then wanting to use his company as a front group and how he found out about it through Iran-Contra and how he went on the rabbit trail and then, you know, proving weather weapons, which is all out in the open now, and the FEMA camps and the planned lockdowns with poison shots and, you know, pandemics. We can talk about all the stuff he was right about 30 years ago, 25 years ago, or... this is a smart guy at 80-plus years old, still as sharp as he ever was. What is this great mind of Bob Fletcher thinking is coming now and what's currently happening, and what is it like to be so vindicated? I know it's, for me, a sick feeling. We wish we could have stopped it. Businessman, investor, film producer, speaker, and author. After years of business professional career, Bob became involved in U.S. government top-secret covert arms sales without even knowing him. In a simple business merger, Bob merged his toy manufacturing company with a company that imported watches. The company was called Vista USA, Inc. and was a covert operational front for U.S. arms sales and covert mercenary training. Eventually, the owner Gary Best attempted to recruit Fletcher into the business of arms sales, and Fletcher refused to become involved. Later, Bob became a witness in the Iran-Contra mess, and he then became an investigator, assisting several House and Senate investigations. Since then, Bob has been chasing bad guys in the government and producing some of the world's most powerful exposés. Bob's reports are viewed all over the world, and now his wife is in care in a nursing home. He doesn't even have a website. Doesn't have a way, even a P.O. box to support him. But next time he comes on, we're going to get that set up because he has all these archives and his research that needs to get out to the world. And we need to really remember the people that back when almost nobody knew what was going on, there was Bob Fletcher and others. And I think about these folks all the time, and he's here with us. So, Bob, we're about 5 minutes to break. You can start wherever you want, at the beginning or current. I kind of want to get your view on the world today and everything that's going on. We can go back to the start and walk through what's happened. But, wow, what is it like to be vindicated in spades?
Well, the problem is my predictions, which were so really horrible, was that we were going to be taken over by the New World Order, one world government. It goes back 72, 73 years. Actually, which people don't realize that term, New World Order, one world government, which is what we are seeing today out of Washington, D.C. That's what we are faced with. And how we're going to handle it, I'm not sure. But that term was the term that Adolf Hitler used when, in 1938, when he started his junk, his crazy idea of a one world government, new world order. That's what he called it himself, Adolf Hitler's term. And it's been carried on by bad persons in government who don't care at all about the Constitution or the freedom at all, because that doesn't work. And the New World Order, I discovered it, oh gosh, 30 years ago. I got involved in, and it's too complex. We'll get back relative to some of the crazy interfacings of all of my inquiries, my investigations. That, by the way, I actually had completed about 15. Actually, I did probably 19 altogether. A lot of my reports started out originally when they were trying to attack, quote unquote, the militia movement. That was when I got some attention. But what I did, which was a little slick of me, I guess, I ended up over the last 30 years befriending the bad guys in government as well as the good guys, and neither side knew where I was at any given time. So I became supported by people, major New World Order people, for example, Senator John Kerry. I became close with him during a period of time. I knew.
And by the way, you're not just saying that. I mean, we have the C-SPAN hearings with you on Iran-Contra.
Yeah, well, and of course, yes, go ahead. Sure.
No, go ahead.
And what happened, actually, for example, with the Iran, with that investigation, with the looking into the militia, as we were stating that we were bad guys. Of course, none of those people even realize that the militia, that term, and that group that existed, is what created the separation from the king in Britain that began America. The term militia was prior to the Constitution, and it was now the bad guys. I use this kind of, it's a vague terminology to use the idea of bad guys and good guys. But that's rather simplistic. And I have to point something out now for the folks that haven't realized this. It's not Democrat bad guys and Republicans all good guys. The right, what we refer to the right, and they're doing all the time with the separation of Republican versus Democrats. That's not what it is. What it amounts to is the reality that we have major corrupted personalities in both the Republican and the Democratic side. The separation, just using those, the left and the right, and saying Democrats are the leftists and the Republicans being on the right. The amount of criminality at the highest levels that I discovered, and I ended up working with whistleblowers at the highest levels of our government for the last 30 years. Now, I'm 82 years old now. I've got a multitude of non-operative problems physically, so whatever. That's my case situation, and I realize it, and it's amazing. People are always saying, well, gee, you don't look like you're 82 years old. Well, I am 82 years old, and I'm about to be gone. I've been professionally hit three times by assassination attempts. We can go back later on. We'll talk.
Yeah, for folks that don't know, in the old days, now they just kill you politically most of the time. When you were doing the stuff you were doing, they killed people on a routine basis. I remember my dad's, they called him my dad's uncle, but he was really my dad's cousin, was an Army Special Operations guy that went around. His job was killing people. And I remember he read my first book in like 2002, and he said, I'm surprised you're not dead. We used to kill people for a lot less than this. But they've kind of shifted from killing people to just killing the masses of people with shots and things. But yeah, when you were speaking out, they killed people.
Oh, they were I'll tell you what, the numbers of dead people are mind-boggling. I had a fellow I just ran into the other day, way up here, and I'm in Never Never Land. I'm up in Idaho. Fortunately, we're in a little, like a 90 mile square up here where the weather, with all the stuff that's going on presently with the weather, we're kind of don't get a heck of a lot of that. And we're extraordinary.
Yeah, but also, no, there's an area of Idaho. I remember years ago talking about it. I've looked it up. There's an area in those valleys that basically is amazing and just blocks the weather.
I think that's what it is. It's just, everything comes in. We've had a couple of bad snow situations, but we're not getting any of that crazy stuff that's taken place. And I understand in studies and dealing with people that are above top secret whistleblowers. For 30 years, I had gotten it to a point where I was big mouth and had either the lack of knowledge to keep my mouth shut, but I was out running around. And what happened was, over the last 30 years, just making kind of keep this in general terms, the specific numbers of information that I had received and I had put into many reports myself. Matter of fact, I'm distracting myself here. But I ended up doing a multitude of investigative reports at the request of different senators and congressmen, congressional people from the Pentagon, people from a multitude of the three.
And again, for radio listeners that weren't around when I was around 30 years ago or aren't watching us on TV, we're showing all this on C-SPAN, all these hearings, you on national TV.